Welcome to episode 365. Are you planning to have a baby? Maybe you've got a little one and you're facing the reality that loads of kids these days have allergies, intolerances, mental health issues, and that your little one is likely to have a number of diseases at a much younger age than you or your grandparents did. If little ones are a part of the conversation in your house, then this episode is for you, because we talk about the reality that there's a link between poor modern nutrition and the rates of ADHD and mental health issues early in life. We discuss what happens when you do not have a vaginal birth, meaning what you lose out on by choosing to do a C-section. We talk about sex desire dropping as a result of low testosterone in men, and that the health of the man impacts successful pregnancy. We also talk about whether or not IVF is a smart choice for the health of your baby. And there's a bit of controversy here from me. And the most important thing that we discuss is the integral relationship between the sun, vitamin D, and getting pregnant naturally. So much goodness in this episode. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? I hope you're having a cracker of a day. Obviously, the universe is showing you all of the right signs and you're in the right place, which is here with me. Now, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And if that's you, the links to inquire about my emotional binge and overeating programs are in the show notes below. Now, today's amazing guest is back for more of the How to Not Get Sick and Die action. Dr. Stasha Gomanak first appeared on episode 301 and 303, speaking about some quite alternative perspectives on dealing with sleep issues and disorders like sleep apnea. And I encourage you to listen to both of those episodes if you have any challenges at all with sleep, because these concepts are unlike anything you may have heard before. So Stasha Gomanak, who is she? Well, she's an amazing medical doctor and graduated in 1983. Her neurology residency was done at the Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, and she practiced neurology from 1991 to 2004, before moving with her husband to Texas. Starting in 2004, she began to dedicate more of her practice to the treatment of sleep and sleep disorders, and the thing that really put her on the map happened in 2012 and 2016, when she published two pivotal articles about the global struggle with worsening sleep, the possible causes and solutions being related to vitamin D deficiency and the relationship with the intestinal microbiome. Trust me, you've got to go back and check out those episodes 301 and 303 of this show. Having said all of that about sleep, today we're heading down the path of talking about pregnancy, miscarriages, babies, autoimmune disease, and vitamin D, and no doubt plenty more. But first and foremost, welcome back to the show, Stasha. How are you?
Good. And thank you so much, Maddie, for having me back. This is a part of vitamin D and the things related to it that's very dear to my heart. We just have a new grandbaby who's 3 months old who lives in Melbourne. And so it's a part of my life as well as part of my coaching.
I love that we have that Melbourne connection. And like, what are the chances that you've got a grandbaby and a daughter here in Melbourne.
Yes, I actually thought of contacting you when we were there in February, but I was busy because we had this newborn that we were supposed to be there to help with.
Of course. Well, next time you're here, definitely let me know.
Okay.
So I'm curious, with your daughter's pregnancy, is that how you started to get into this world of vitamin D and pregnancy and preterm health and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, I'm going to answer that in a sideways way. One of the things that's happened to me over the last 50 years is I watch my colleagues, my friends, my daughters, watch the things that happen to them, and then I wonder about them. And as a physician, we're just trained to say things like, oh, we see that. And, oh, that's when that happens. And, oh, women in this age get gallbladder disease or they get thyroid disease. And there was never the next question, which is, well, why? Like, why would that happen? And when I started to get things wrong with me and I started to have a sleep disorder perimenopausally, was waking up an awful lot, then you're, as a physician, you're put in a situation of, well, I'm not going to take those pills that I give out like candy. I don't want to take those. And then you start to think, well, so the answer about my daughters is that I've been thinking about both of them since the beginning. They're both stepdaughters to me. And I've known Megan since she was 13 and my older daughter, Melissa, since she was 18. Megan had a tubal pregnancy 7 or 8 years ago. And because of that, she had to go to the hospital emergently and had bleeding and she lost the fallopian tube. And I really tried to convince her that vitamin D was playing a role in this. And because she's my daughter, they are really the hardest to convince because they just, I'm around and I'm always talking about this crazy vitamin D stuff. So then she got married and she and Nick, her husband, wanted to get pregnant and they went through infertility because they tried for a year unsuccessfully. And then for the first time after the 2 or 3 times that they harvested eggs, she actually contacted me and said, you know, can this help me? Because I tried to get her into this a year before. So it did indeed help her. And she called me and said, they've told me I have old eggs. And Stasha, do you think that this will help that? And I said, Megan, I don't think so. I mean, I don't see how D is going to make a difference in that. And she said, well, I'm going to try anyway. And she made her husband get on the Right Sleep program too. And she got her D level up over 60 or up under over 150 in your units. And surprisingly, she went back to the fertility expert. And the next time they harvested eggs, the fertility expert said, gee, your eggs are class AB now. Wow. We've never seen them go from old eggs to AB. And then they were able to fertilize the egg in vitro and implant. And now we have a beautiful 3-month-old Eleanor. Now, that's one event. And I haven't actually gone back to look through other events, but the infertility experts are getting interested in this. There's plenty of literature to support that normal pregnancy really is directly related. You get your D over 40 and your likelihood of getting pregnant is much higher. That means you don't really have to pay $70,000. All you have to do is go to the Bahamas or to Bali, even better. And hang out and get, you know, get your D up. And one of the big conflicts, especially when I'm in Melbourne, is there is so much pressure not to be in the sun. So there's been this big campaign that sun exposure is bad for you. It's not that it's wrong. It's that it's too absolute. It's when you should keep it within the context of if you take a bunch of Brits and you dump them in the middle of Australia and have them raise sheep, you know, they're going to really have skin damage because they're bright white. And the people who are native to Australia have much darker skin. If you picture it through the lens of, well, gee, we didn't know enough about this to give an appropriate recommendation, which is, and which was from the 80s, don't sunburn. That's very different than don't let your child until they're 6 months old. So unfortunately, there's been a slow, steady trend within the dermatologists that I don't think is well-based. Anyway, that's kind of off topic for what you guys were asking about. But yeah, my daughters play a large role in this. My other daughter is struggling with drug addiction. And I personally believe that people who are addicted to chemicals often are addicted to things that make them feel more normal. And sugar can be one of those, that we use things to alter our mood when our mood is not really good to start with. And D plus all the stuff that we've talked about for the microbiome, and most importantly, sleep and what happens while we're sleeping and all the chemicals that we make when we have normal sleep that make us curious and happy and want to go out and do stuff and have initiative. Those are all ultimately, oddly enough, linked to being outside more.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because there's more and more people starting to speak out, and it's usually natural health professionals. Because obviously medical professionals are a bit more fearful of the consequences. But yeah, the issue is, especially in a, you know, city like Melbourne, you know, we're in winter at the moment, And so nobody's going outside at all, really. But most people work inside, they live inside, and then they go out to the beach for 8 hours after having a whole year of nothing. And obviously their skin has no resilience. They don't have that, you know, solar conditioning, that solar callus. And that's the example that is used for get away from the sun. It causes skin cancer. And it's like, well, maybe if you drink 1,000 beers instead of, you know, one beer across 10 years, you know, like each day or something or whatever, it's like, obviously you're probably going to die from alcohol poisoning on that day. So it's such a illogical recommendation because so many people go to the beach, you know, once a month or once a week and get all of that damage. But I think in regards to the pregnancy conversation and neonatal health and all of that kind of stuff, I read a bunch of the papers that you sent over, and that sent me down a rabbit hole of talking to, you know, midwife friends and a bunch of different things. But one of the things, now there was lots that really shocked me, but I'm going to start here because I think a lot of people would love to hear about this, but was the relationship between vitamin D and stretch marks, and that there was a lower likelihood of stretch marks based on vitamin D consumption.
I wondered about that for years. When I was watching my colleague, I didn't have any children, but as I was watching friends come look perfect after two babies, and then the next person looks really bad after two babies, or one of my friends looks bad after the third baby, but didn't look that way after the first and second baby. And then, oh, wait, D is on the skin, and D would then, gee, what about the concept that some people get way overweight and then they lose weight again, but their skin shrinks? And then you see the Biggest Loser television show, and they force people who are profoundly D deficient, who don't have that happen. And then they show you these folds of skin. And so at the very beginning of this, I kept thinking, wow, this means it really has something that's made on the skin that makes the skin adjust to these changes in how big we are. That's really cool. So it's directly related.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be, that haven't had babies yet, are going to be really happy to hear that, because they're like, oh, vitamin D, I'm going straight to iHerb.
Yeah, but and more important than that, it keeps you from getting fat. You just gain the baby weight. Megan was totally amazed that she gained this baby weight and then lost it again so easily, because the microbiome is really what establishes what we do with our calories. So I think the biggest impact is if you can have a baby, gain the baby weight, lose it again, have another baby, lose it again, not have stretch marks, not have any residual medical problems. And it's not just D, it's really sleeping better that makes all of that and having the right microbiome. But that means having babies is a whole different undertaking.
What of the research that you looked through, what did you find was the most profound connection between vitamin D and either baby health or health of mum?
The thing that I found was most profound was that it was connected to so many things. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, oh my God, this is connected to why my grandson was born at 27 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the D covers the placenta, and it is a heavy part of protecting the baby from the mom's immune system. So then to carry the baby to term, you have to have a good D that can take you all the way through the pregnancy. And so from the fact that we have amazing neonatology, so my grandson is now 15. He has nothing wrong with him. He was born at 27 weeks. That's just phenomenal. And that's because our neonatology is so good. But the reason why it's so good is because we're delivering our babies way too early. That's how we've gotten good at it. Most people don't look at it that way, and I never did either. Mm-hmm. But neonatology, things that we never really understood, like eclampsia and preeclampsia, those are directly D-related. They're D-related through this weird set of cascade of events that has to do with blood vessels and blood pressure, et cetera. But postpartum depression, a huge problem that could be prevented. Then the next cascade of events is all the childhood diseases that if mom's D and mom's microbiome are normal during fetal development, it's very likely that autism, if we know about this and how to manage it, will go to zero. It's not that autism is a single thing, but it's certainly not a genetic disease. And it probably is linked to multiple things. For instance, endocannabinoids that are supposed to come from mom's microbiome, the B vitamins that are supposed to come from mom's microbiome, these things that we as the mom carrying the baby were supposed to provide to the fetus that are actually a large part of the microbiome. That means if you lose your microbiome after the first baby because your D is too low, that means your second baby has these developmental problems. And the fact that we're seeing things like autism, ADD, and autoimmune disease all going higher and higher, when all of them, as far as I can tell, could probably be prevented by getting D to be in the right place for pregnant moms, have their microbiome be normal, and then their life with an early infant, plus all the complications of what your life is like with a child who can't learn very easily or doesn't concentrate well. The level of complexity of having two children now is really overwhelming for the mom. And so I think these things are preventable. The issue in the background is, how do we get the practice of medicine to move its thinking and do the clinical trials in the right way? So one of the things you will have noticed in those articles is the best clinical trials are really by two people, one of whom is a pediatrician and the other is an OBGYN, Carol Wagner, and they have done prospective clinical trials where they say, okay, we're just going to make sure that the vitamin D level stays above 40. It wasn't even we're going to control it to in between 40 and 50, or in your units, that would have been much lower, but we're just going to get it above 40. It'll be above 100 in British units. And then we're going to measure the incidence of preeclampsia, of autoimmune disease of pregnancy, of preliminary diabetes during the pregnancy, of preterm delivery. And they were able to show that all of those problems were much more easily controlled and the incidence was lower. And then, frankly, most of the in vitro fertilization doesn't really need to happen. Mom and dad both need to have D's that are up to be able to be really fertile. I mean, the fact that D controls our fertility makes a lot of sense. You don't want to have your baby during a time when there's no D, because that means if there's no sun, there's no food. Then your baby dies. And because humans are so self-focused, we don't think about this chemical pathway within the context of every single animal that's reproducing, every mammal that has a baby. It's the same thing. They don't want to have a baby. Unless you're a bear and you go into your den and then you breastfeed the cubs in a hole where they're protected, you really don't want to have your children during a time when there is no food, because there's eight, you know, this doesn't happen in Melbourne, when there's 8 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah. The thing that just came to mind as you were describing the lack of vitamin D, aka the lack of sun, or, you know, being in the darker, quieter months or the colder parts of the earth, was this idea that I guess we have these newborns and wrap them up, like, or we're already not outside very often, and then we wrap up these newborns, and so it's possible that these little newborns don't even get exposure to the sun anyway, because they're so protected in their prams and, you know, in whatever they're wrapped up in on mum's chest or however, that, like, should we be lying our babies out in the sun?
There's a very interesting quote out of an article that was published in 1925 by a Dr. Garland, who talks about how rickets is a disease of the Western world, and that it comes from living indoors. And it's a very tragic, I don't have a copy of it to read it to you, but it's a tragic paragraph where he then says, interestingly, in India, the story of rickets is very different, because India is a very old culture with very hot weather. But if you compare the lower castes of India, who are still farming they have their babies and strap their babies to their back and go out and care for the soil. But in the upper castes of India that practice purdha, which means that the women and children are kept in enclosed apartments, the incidence of rickets is quite high, and osteomalacia of the moms, which is the words they use for what is now osteoporosis, is also quite common. So in 1925, he's saying that osteoporosis is linked to the lack of sun exposure and that rickets exist. So the definition of rickets at that time was a colicky baby who doesn't play, doesn't feed, and there was a clinical syndrome, but it was so nonspecific that the cause wasn't known. There was a lot of fighting in the literature about whether or not it was about hygiene or nutrition or about sunlight. But there were many articles about sunlight exposure. So at the time Garland is publishing this, another guy, Alfred Hess, is publishing that he's taking kids out of the tenements of New York City and exposing them to sunlight and showing that their rickets goes away. Because a colicky baby, which is still very common, is a very nonspecific definition and could have many causes, when the X-ray machine became available, they noticed that there were specific bone X-ray findings. Those, because they're more objective, got into the medical textbook. And the actual definition, original definition of rickets, which is vitamin D deficiency, is not really talked about. So the odd thing is there are lots of kids with early dental caries, with teeth that don't actually start to come out of their gums at the right time, who are not sleeping and not doing their developmental progression the way they should. And that was typical rickets. That means that sun exposure 100 years ago was linked to this disease in infants and toddlers. But our pediatricians are not being taught that. Our dentists, when I go and I lecture to dentists, this is in their practice all the time. A very well-educated, very committed mom who's not giving their kids any candy, who in their 2.5-year-old, their first teeth already have dental caries. And the dentist is wondering why. And the mom is freaking out, like, what did I do wrong? No, the kid's D level is profoundly low. That means the kid's microbiome in the mouth, that we now know is really related to how we get dental caries, is also not right.
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. I've got a potentially controversial comment to make, but I would just love your feedback or thoughts on this idea. So I often think, you know, I've sort of transitioned from hardcore medical cancer research across to a lot of natural ideas. And I guess fundamentally, I'm a biologist, right? And so what that sort of for me means is that I have this underlying belief that nature doesn't make mistakes. And as we've made this movement towards IVF and these, you know, sort of medically induced ways of becoming pregnant, part of me thinks that in this sort of evolutionary biology idea, it's like that's the beginning of the demise of the species, because we're forcing together genomes that aren't actually strong enough to co-create in nature. And so I'm wondering, do you think that, I guess when it comes to vitamin D and all of these other nutrients that are relevant in this situation, that we're going to reach a point where even IVF isn't going to work because people are so nutrient deficient and each generation of baby is becoming more and more nutrient deficient because it was born nutrient deficient because originally it was a baby that nature didn't want to make anyway?
That is a very challenging question. Let me say it in a different way.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a logical place for it to go. First, if there were natural mechanisms that would keep both men and women from being fertile when their Ds were low, those were actually designed for the survival of the species, not the individual. So those are processes that have evolved for millions of years on this planet. This whole system was there in the reptiles, in the dinosaurs, acting in exactly the same way. That means if we take a mom who still has a D of 32, which prevented her from being fertile enough to have a baby, and by chance, the reason why you and I are having this conversation is because the D being that low means that she's lost her normal microbiome. That's the important piece. That's the most important piece. As soon as she loses her normal microbiome, you've just implanted a fetus into a mom that is actually not supplying all of the needed support for brain and body development. Now, it happens that my daughter Megan's IVF expert is using prenatal vitamins that has much higher doses of Bs than the typical prenatal that's in the US. So that's helping. But it turns out also that if we know that cannabinoids must be present, then you really are missing the basic building blocks that are supposed to come from the bacteria to become the endocannabinoids to allow that child's brain, spinal cord development normally. And there are probably 500 other things that we don't know about yet. That means you really de facto have done what you've described. You've implanted a baby into a woman that is not supplying the needed pieces to make a normal baby. That means we're now facing a lot of kids who have autism, and I get feedback from autistic people who say I'm a bad person because I'm saying being autistic is not normal. Well, one of the definitions of being autistic, which is a spectrum of things, is that we don't socialize normally. And since humans are social animals, that probably leads to a lack of reproduction because we will not go out on dates and marry and then have babies. So ultimately, it is kind of a winding down of the normal reproductive cycles. Now, what that's going to mean is that the societies who are still living outdoors are going to take over for the rich white people.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. And I mean, not only is it, you know, a reduction in the amount of children that we're having due to vitamin D, but also the technology that we've got in the wealthy world keeps everybody separate physically, you know, like the apps and the computers and our phones and our Netflix. It keeps us in our own home. We're not forced to go out into the community to actually bump into somebody that we may find attractive enough to have a baby with.
That's really upsetting. I personally am really glad I'm the age that I am because I feel challenged by socially what's going to happen. I mean, that is a kind of a separate discussion, but it's something that we're all facing.
Yeah.
And it's scary because it's going to mean a big change.
Oh, yeah, an enormous change. And, you know, it comes back to this lack of going outside idea and therefore lack of vitamin D. It just perpetuates the problem that already exists. But I was going to say, and you've already sort of mentioned this a little bit about, you know, the mental health disorders of children. But one of the things I found profoundly interesting about this stuff was that the early stages of development in the pregnancy phase, that relationship between ADD, ADHD, autism. And the reason I found that interesting is because it's such a massive conversation, at least on the internet at the moment. And it feels like every doctor and his best friend is handing out an ADD or an ADHD diagnosis at the moment. you know, makes sense to me after reading that it's related to vitamin D, but equally, I, you know, it's where do we draw the line between it being a lack of nutrition, but also the toxic nutrition that's coming in and being destructive, you know, the vegetable oils and the sugar and the Western diet?
Yeah, we really don't know the answers to any of those other questions. And I don't mean to minimize the other ideas that are currently being tossed around. I was just reading the New York Times article this morning about the permanent PO, whatever, the chemicals that come from plastics. And so, unfortunately, there are very few things that you and I can directly do in our life that might change the outcome of these problems that we're talking about. And anything that I could personally, if I were going to get pregnant today, and I'm not going to, obviously, because of my age, but if I were going to get pregnant today, I would like to know what are the things that I can personally do that would make my pregnancy, my ability to get pregnant and my pregnancy and my success with that baby and with my husband. Because there's a separate piece which has to do with if people are already challenged, if their moods are already terrible, if teenagers, like I have friends who say my teenage boy would rather play video games than go out with girls. And it's not because he's gay, it's because he has no sex drive. And sex drive is all about sleep, which is all about whether the D and the microbiome are right. And it's not like men and women have always had a really smooth road together. They never did. All of the great literature is about how we can't stand each other because we're different, yet we're driven towards each other by these hormones. So, and we're not the only species like that. You know, cats don't necessarily get together and stay together as a pair for their whole life. Some species do, but we do nothing but talk about how hard it is and make up religions so that we can give rules so we'll stay together. So there's another issue, which is one, once you actually find a partner, then you add a baby into it, and then you have this challenge of staying together and having a family that stays together long enough. So I'm a little fearful that not only the living indoors, the social isolation of the electronics, but that we have a chemical thing that's playing a role in our attractiveness to each other that will then lead to, I'm just going to spend the rest of my life with my buddy so that half of the men in the world never get married and half of the women decide to have a baby by, you know, artificial insemination. And so things are going to change a lot. That doesn't necessarily mean that humans had a perfect life before. And it's also important to state that it's not like I know the ideal place for vitamin D to be. I have a very isolated little wedge of knowledge about sleep and D that no one else is talking about, which is why we're having this conversation. But there's still an awful lot to learn about it. And in the background, the thing that I love is more and more people are saying we should be bringing up our children in school outdoors. We should be devising outdoor settings for our children. We should be doing more and more things outdoors. And I think the final answer is that humans are they explore. They're very curious. You're very curious. And that means when we figure out that there's something wrong, the cool thing is I've lived long enough so that I can go to LA and I can see the mountains now. When I was in high school, you couldn't see the mountains. You couldn't really swim in a lot of the rivers in the U.S. That means we're curious and we pay attention and we can reverse things that have gone the wrong way. So I don't want to stay in a negative message. I want to say if we figure this part out, and this is all over the OBGYN literature, and actually the running mate, I don't remember her name, but the running mate that Robert Kennedy Jr. has selected, who was married to, I think, the owner of Google or the starter of Google, is talking about how infertility can be offset in a more natural way by going outdoors. And I saw that in an article and I was like, yes, this is so cool. So ultimately, I think these ideas are coming from the public and going to their physicians because medicine is so slow to make the correction. But I think it's very possible to do it. So even though you and I are curious about what this road would lead to at the final end, and God knows we're not the only ones doing that. Mm. There are so many really sad TV shows and movies about where we're going to go if we go in the same direction, that I'm thrilled with the idea that the younger generation is going to learn this material and change the direction of where we're going.
Yeah, I think speaking, you know, on that idea of what you just talked about in regards to that positive idea of we can change, I can speak, and you probably know this as well, but I can speak as a man. And in the last, let's say, 5, maybe a little bit more years, we've really seen in the wellness community, and whether or not this is a societal or a cultural response to the idea of, you know, the progressive ideas of trans and all of that kind of gender identity stuff, but we're seeing in the natural health community and possibly the medical community this push towards the realization that most men's testosterone is really low, and that the feminizing of men is possibly a result of their hormone levels and less about the way that culture is showing up in our life. And it's probably a combination of both, right? And so in regards to one, creating a healthy baby, you obviously want a healthy father that's got a healthy gut, healthy sperm, healthy testosterone levels. But we're also seeing this idea of, and I would include myself in this, I got my testosterone levels checked. They were literally half of my dad's. Then my dad had his checked, which doesn't make any sense. I'm a natural health professional. I eat super well compared to the average Australian. But there's so many factors that play into that. You know, I sit at this computer trying to create this podcast and do all of this stuff with my health and wellness business. And I'm sitting in a chair inside all of the time. I'm not doing manual labor. And so, you know, this idea that we've got these men that would rather sit in front of video games than, you know, chase women, which to me, like, if I think back to when I was much younger, I'm like, that is insane. I used to get in trouble all the time for chasing women around. but it makes sense to me. And I think it's a combination.
Yeah, I think these hormonal impulses are very difficult to distinguish as such, because we humans make up stories that explain them. So there's a huge amount all the time coming out about what's right about this guy, what's wrong about that girl. We have the Bachelor show, we have all this stuff. But if you put us within the setting of all the other mammals, they're attracted to each other by hormonal things. Every single animal that has two sexes, which is most, and then plants on our planet too. You could go back to the question of why do we have two sexes in the first place? It's a lot easier just to butt off something. You know, we have all our DNA. Why don't we just butt off another human just like me? So there's a basic reason why we need two sexes. And then that means I have to be attracted to and do something kind of weird with this other animal that I recognize as a male of my specific species. Every single animal has to do that. And yet they're successful. And I sit outside and I watch the birds, and I, you know, when I'm snorkeling, I'm watching these fish and going, I wonder if that stripe is partially so they can, you know, like, why are they all those colors? And why does the coral do this? And these are all things that are related in the same way as, why does my neighbor have a son who doesn't want to date and looks kind of girlish? And then if we make it socially appropriate not to comment on that, that we just accept everyone, no matter how they kind of all look alike now, instead of looking like two sexes, we've missed the bigger picture.
Yeah, I love that sex falls into the category of this kind of weird thing that we have to do with each other.
It is weird. Like, why would it has no positive survival advantage for the individual. Mm. And there's so much dedicated in animals, in all these, like, just with birds, they do these little dances and they make these songs and flowers and all these fascinating things that we learn about. But we don't think of it in the context of this is all about one species actually recognizing the male or the female of the same species and then mating together and mixing their DNA. We don't look at it through that lens. We hear it when we're about, you know, 9. And then we go, oh, that's weird. And then we don't take that same thinking through our life, but that's a major part of our lives and most animals' lives.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, probably many people don't know this, but when I was at university the first time many years ago, I just liked to show off a little bit. And so I used to get paid to do people's assignments. And that was a lucrative business at university. And I did a lot of midwifery and nursing assignments. And so something that I was really interested in after doing those assignments many years ago was just the drop with the vitamin D, circulating concentrations of vitamin D, the drop in cesarean section rates, because I did a bunch of assignments on BBACs. And so, because I think cesareans are becoming more and more common because of the convenience of the doctor and the convenience of the mother just saying, oh, let's book it in at a certain time. But in regards to the conversation, not just about D, but intestinal microbiome, I think, you know, the vaginal birth, there's a much greater immunological benefit to going through a natural birth.
Yes, there are more and more articles that are talking about that. Right after I fell into D and then got into the microbiome as being the supply of the B vitamins, National Geographic had an article, a front page article about the advantages of vaginal delivery, and that you get exposed to mom's microbiome. And that's really a part of our whole change in the way we think of these other little organisms that live all over us. You know, I'm really kind of like a character in Peanuts, you know, Pigpen, who has this big cloud of dust and dirt all over him as he wanders around. And that's really the way we go through life now. We have viruses and fungus and bacteria that is all over us. And when we have the right group of each of those, we are actually protected by them because they are fighting off their competitors. So we actually give them kind of like a platform to live on, and they're happily living on us. And in the meantime, they're fighting off C. difficile and things that would kill us. It's not that C. difficile by itself is the problem. It's that when C. diff takes over the body and is the predominant bacteria and gets into too many of them, then you get ill. So our whole way of looking at that is very different. I just had a very interesting set of conversations with dentists. I lecture to dentists a lot. And now I've started asking them questions before I go into the lecture. And so I was asking the pediatric dentists if they had little kids, 2-3-year-olds, pardon me, who walk in the door for their first visit and already have a lot of cavities. Pardon me. And they say yes. And then my question is, what is your impression of why those kids have 5 cavities on their first visit? What are their parents doing wrong? And one of the things that I've seen with my daughter, Megan, is they're saying things like, oh, you don't let the old people kiss your baby on the face because you're going to pass all this bad bacteria. That concept is actually, I think, not right. It turns out that the bacteria that inhabits us, the bacteria that inhabits your baby's face and mouth since the day of birth is really established by mom's D level and mom's microbiome. That means mom's contact with that baby will mean that that baby has a protective bacterial layer. And humans have always smothered their grandbabies with kisses on their face. We've always laid on top of each other, on top of our animals, in the dirt. That means it's not really about sharing the pacifier or, you know, washing off the pacifier. We're still in this mindset that sterility is the key. Well, that's not realistic from what we know now. You also don't want someone who has an active staph lesion on their face kissing your baby. It's not as though these are not absolutes. It's like the idea of not going out in the sun. We went from, gee, we have antibiotics and we can support better life through using these antibiotics to thinking that they're the answer to everything, when in fact, our basic bugs that are disgusting and little mites that are having sex in our pores, like while we're talking, that's gross. The whole idea is really gross, but it turns out there's always a protective side of that. That means that protecting the baby from the sun, protecting the baby from other bacteria, is what we're selling to moms now. But in actual fact, like what I told you about the 100 years ago, the articles about the babies in India, if you go back through what happened to the rural populations who are lower castes in India, as they're having to leave the big city and go back to their town and get exposed to COVID, the outcome of those who are still digging in the dirt, who are very poor, who have very poor nutrition, actually was a better outcome for COVID exposure than the highly educated that are working in software industry, working inside. And that's a parallel to the same sort of questions that we had. Are we telling the moms the right things about how to protect their baby? Or should we loosen that a little bit and say, you know, bacteria are really part of life. And as long as your D level is good and your microbiome is good, and here's how you can get it there, your baby will actually have much less in the way of infectious disease problems. It's going to take us at least 10 or 20 years to generate those articles. And first, medicine has to be willing to look at how they do these studies with vitamin D and stop saying that vitamin D is hype. It's not hype. It's a basic part of our body that we need to learn about.
Yeah. It's almost as if, generationally speaking, a lineage, a family line, can only have one generation that is at the top of the mountain, which is inside the palace, celebrating its wealth before the negative effects of being inside the palace away from the sun begin the demise of that lineage and the genetic stability of that lineage. It's almost like we can only have one wealthy generation before the consequences begin.
Maddie, you really are out there on the edge. You know, this has socioeconomic implications that are really important that I usually, especially in the U.S., where the color of the skin has been given so much appropriate emotional content. So there are lots of things about that are being written now about castes, the caste arrangements in the U.S. Well, every group of humans devise, once they get over maybe, and I'm making this part up, I don't know how many, but once they get over like 150 people in a tribe, they immediately start to make castes. That was done in Australia, that was done within the white settlers of Australia, that was done between the white settlers and the Aboriginals of Australia, that even if they weren't classically enslaved in the way they were in the U.S. And it becomes quite obvious if you think about what it was like to be a Greek slave in a Roman household, that if you looked a lot like the family, it would be really hard to establish who was a slave and who wasn't a slave. Mm. You would have to tattoo them. You would have to put a necklace on them. You would have to find some physical feature that they couldn't get rid of to say, oh, that person is a slave, okay? If you go to Central Africa and you pick up a lot of people who have dark skin and they can't get rid of that, then you can just educate those people to say, you know, you're worse than, you're not really able because of these 52 things I just made up to do this. If you read about Japanese culture, I just read Shogun again because it's on the television. They made this incredibly intricate caste system. India did the same. Chickens do the same. So does every animal that comes together as a group. The chickens do it. There's an A chicken and a B chicken. That's why we call it pecking order. Animals that are mammals that actually hunt together as a group, like wolves, always have an alpha male. So we all do that. Then we wrap these stories into things like D, which is really unfortunate because what that means, ultimately, when I fell into this D stuff, I thought, you know, the socioeconomic standing of African Americans in our country has been so challenged anyway. And now when they do everything the doctor tells them to do, and they want to be good parents, and they cover their kids with sunscreen, their child is put in a situation where they don't sleep, and therefore they can't learn, And that kind of guarantees that they'll stay in a lower socioeconomic group. It means you've taken what was a social caste system imposed from the outside, and you've made an accompanying biologic stumbling block that makes it hard for them to get out of bed, hard for them to go to work, hard for them to actually do the basic things that humans want to do. That was, to me, like, overwhelming. I actually sent a letter to Michelle Obama right when they were first elected. That's how long ago that was.
Wow.
That's not something I talk about on any other podcast because it's too socially inflammatory. But to me, I was so angry about that because medicine could have done better. Medicine didn't look at this the right way. And there were some authors who were looking at it the correct way from the beginning. And they made a choice not to look at that way.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I want to have a whole other podcast conversation about that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, you were inciting a lot of discussion around these topics. They are difficult topics.
Completely. I would argue that one of the issues with today's social media world is that, and journalism, is that everything is extremist clickbait. And that's part of the problem, is because nobody's willing to sit down and have long-form discussion, which is why I love the podcast, because we're able to have an entire hour of conversation about a topic where, you know, somebody doesn't just grab four words that I said and say, oh my God, this horrible human. You know, it's like somebody could extract from this podcast that I think IVF is the worst thing ever, right? Which is not what I said. So I'm a big believer that a lot of the, you know, journalism that's out there is designed to inflame the public. And it probably has been for 1,000 years, to be totally honest. It's probably been the job of journalism. But I think these conversations have to happen. Otherwise, they just stay as inflammatory issues and nothing gets solved.
I completely agree. I think there will, but I'm pretty sure that there will be some, well, maybe that's what you want. You know, there'll be some points of discussion that are very emotionally laden.
Yeah, I think challenging conversations are the gateway to the next level, you know? Because obviously there's always so much brilliance that comes out of your amazing mind. Where can everybody find you on the internet if they need some more Stasha in their life?
Thank you, Maddie. www.drgomanak.com. And I now have a YouTube channel where we're making tiny little videos, 5 minutes each, addressing one single issue of people asking questions like, does sleep have anything to do with tremor? Does sleep have anything to do with my back pain? Does sleep have anything to do with et cetera? So I have a YouTube channel now, and the name Right Sleep or Dr. Gomanak will bring up that channel.
Amazing. I will put those links in the show notes below so that people have the direct access to get to those places. And I guess to finish up today, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about? And maybe in the context of this pregnancy, newborn baby conversation?
For that, it's a very simple answer. You have to just know that having a D over 40 means that you will get pregnant naturally. There's still more to learn about that, but that's the most important thing. Then you don't have to pay for IVF.
Fantastic. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here, Stasha. I always love your company and love your wisdom, and I'm looking forward to booking in this next podcast as well.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
No worries. We'll see you soon. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember, too, that what works for one person may not work for another. another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.